podcast edit by Abes Audio.
Welcome to another episode of the Mumbrella Cast, a discussion of everything under Australia's media and marketing umbrella. I'm your host and the editor of Mumbrella, Neil Griffiths, joined by my trusted companion and the publisher of Mumbrella, Mr. Adam Lang. Adam, thanks for coming on.
Hello, Neil. It's good to be here.
Look, we promised last week very big news, and I've been waiting all week for it. So the biggest news of the week, obviously, Adam Lang went to Tom Jones last week. Adam, how was it?
He was fantastic.
Was it really?
Yeah. He was so good. Like, the quality of his voice for a man who's 83.
Is he 83?
Yeah. Oh, wow. And just stunning. So the ICC, great venue, 8,000 capacity, packed, and everyone loving it. And he did a two-hour show with a red-hot band.
Yeah.
So, you know, fantastic show. Loved it.
I'm going to ask more about this off-air, but it's been a pretty big week in the media and marketing industry, as is always the case.
Again.
Come Wednesday morning. We might start with Channel 7,
sure,
Adam, because it has been, let's be honest, it's been a pretty tumultuous time for the network in the last few weeks. Rumblings started on Monday. Again, we recorded this on a Wednesday morning. On Monday morning around then, it was reported that James Warburton will be out of there by the end of next week. So for those who don't know, last December it was announced that James Warburton will be stepping down as Managing Director and CEO of 7 West Media at the end of the financial year 2024, so by the end of June. Jeff Howard, who's the current Chief Financial Officer, will be coming in as Managing Director and CEO. But the report started this week that amidst all this chaos, he will be out by the end of next week. Now, Seven declined to comment when we contact them about this, and it's understood that it still will be before the end of June. But the way people are talking about it and commentating in the industry right now, it's almost given almost a fact that he'll be out of there by next week. What's your reaction, Adam?
So this is an interesting challenge for Seven. It's not really a consumer issue, as in, you know, the millions of people that watch and read and consume their content. That's probably not of major concern to them, what's going on in the executive ranks. But as trading partners for the business of media and advertising who trade with Seven, who am I going to be dealing with and who's running the show? That is a change. And also as an employment brand, like what they're going through, people, all of us, would we consider working with Seven? We'll be watching this with interest. You know, so they've got this great products or set of products that they engage with the audience on, the consumer brand. This is more about the employment brand. And so you can see, the change from James Warburton to Jeff Howard is coming, maybe brought forward. And then you look at, well, why would that happen? So, well, you would note alongside those changes that there's been significant defamation cases, including Bruce Lerman, including Ben Robert Smith. And really, as we've saw today in the Sydney Morning Herald, an incredible article about Bruce McWilliam,
who we should say as well actors. Was reported 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago even that he'll be out as well soon.
Yeah, and certainly a media veteran and well-known in media circles for decades, Bruce McWilliam. So, yeah, they're big changes. Right. And so you're looking at a CEO, a Bruce McWilliam change, et cetera. So these are big changes and a lot of speculation that maybe through all of that perhaps it makes sense to change to a new leader earlier than was planned. So, look, you can see why that would stack up and make sense.
What do you make of it, I guess, when we think of some recent examples, you know, Optus, Qantas, certain things happened and immediate questions started being asked about the hierarchy there, you know. We knew before all the craziness happening at Seven in the last week or so, we knew that McWilliam was already on his way out. Warburton announced he was leaving as well, but now these rumours are he'll be out by the end of next week. Do you think this is a direct result? Is it coincidental, do you think?
Oh, look, all of the above, and I would weight down coincidence. My personal disposition is you don't feel so, I don't believe in them.
Sure.
So I would weight up. Yeah, there's a lot of distractions. And that'll be, unfortunately, consuming oxygen for Seven's trading partners and for the people that work there going, is this unsettled? I mean, I think we all love confidence. Whether it's in our lives, we love to know that things are settled and we know where we're going. And where you don't have that at your employer, I think there's an open question. And so you can see why it would make sense to resolve that question.
It's interesting what you said there before, Adam, about this being a potential employment brand issue and not a consumer brand, because I suppose the average Sunrise viewer isn't going to be concerned that the CEO is leaving, right?
No.
That's not going to stop them watching this.
Exactly right, Neil. It just wouldn't even be on the radar of someone who's, if the quality programming is there for me, that's what I care about.
Yeah, but much like we spoke about, you know, I mentioned Qantas and Optus there, obviously all the chaos happening with the SCA-ARN deal, we've spoken about that at length, about internally, that's where the brand issue might be, because these employees are saying, well, what does this mean for me? What does this mean for everyone here? Is it a stretch to say the Seven brand is in trouble?
I think it is in the consumer sense, as you point out. But as the employment brand, I think people would rightfully say, oh, okay, well, I might just wait till things settle before I decide on my future there. So I think the employment brand is an open question, as you say. And so there's so many good things at Seven. There's so many good people at Seven. So I'd love to think that it doesn't materially impact it. But you can just understand why, hey, if I'm going for a really senior job and I might be reporting to someone who was James Warburton and is now going to be Jeff Howard, was Bruce McWilliam, you know, who am I reporting to now? You know, you can see how that question would be a factor.
And it's a big change of the guard. Bruce McWilliam and Warburton, they're kind of Seven stalwarts.
You look at the broad landscape here, Neil, and look what's happening too in other companies like SCA and ARN, and that proposal to merge those two companies and then divvy up the assets differently. That's a factor. And why is this happening? And you'd say, okay, well, there's certain elements that I think we all know in media. There is cost of living pressure. People's domestic budgets are being consumed on debt differently through higher interest rates. Inflation is leading to greater pressure on energy, cost of living, groceries, etc. So the amount of disposable income that people have to spend on discretionary items has been challenged. Now, not every product or every brand feels this in the same way, but there's certainly cyclical pressure, economic pressure on how much people are able to spend. And so that is happening. There is a cyclical element to what is going on. Then I think there is a structural element to what is changing here too, and to say that the way we're consuming Seven or ARN brands like KIIS or SCA brands like the Triple M network is to say, well, do we all just tune into the analog dial anymore? Well, television, we don't. It's digital TV or streaming, BVOD, SVOD, you know, subscription video on demand, broadcast video on demand. And there are subscription models and there are advertising and subscription models. And the same in radios. Yeah, we might be tuning in on the old wireless or the radios in our car, but we're also listening on the phone or we're streaming or we're listening to an app. So there is structural change in how the industry is distributing content and how people are consuming it. That too is impacting the advertising models that underpin those. So we've got both cyclical economic change and structural change at the same time.
Mm.
And so I think when you're looking at combining all of those things, Seven, SCA, ARN, we know that Seven West has taken a stake in ARN as part of what's going on in that landscape. So I think all of this is connected in a bigger way, not just to the employment brand, but what are these brands going through? What are our media operators going through when they're trading in those circumstances of both cyclical change and structural change at the same time?
Speaking about potential brands in trouble, it literally was a few months ago that Qantas was in the hot seat, right?
Yeah.
This week, however,
they've
taken their first big swing. So for those who don't know, this week, Qantas CEO Vanessa Hudson announced probably the biggest PR move, at least in her tenure. So they've called it, quote, one of the biggest expansions we've made to the frequent flyer program in its 35-year history. So that's opening up 20 million new flight reward seats while charging loyal customers more points for the privilege of redeeming them. Before we get into it, Adam, your reaction to this news?
I think it's a really well-executed change. I think the share price is one manifestation of that. It went up by 5% on the day of the announcement. And I think when you can say those things, like it went well, that means hundreds, possibly thousands of things were considered and executed well to make that the impact. And so I think to the CEO, Vanessa Hudson, and the team, the executive team, that Qantas loyalty program is immensely important to the health of the brand overall. And they've executed it really well. As disclosure, Neil, I am a frequent flyer with Qantas. No real surprises there. but I am one of those loyalty program members.
Yeah.
And I looked at those changes just at my own level and went, good, I can now redeem points for flights more easily. Because that's always been a bit murky to me. It's like, points really worth it? You know, yeah, I can buy things and I get a lot of emails from them. But really what I want is flights and the ability to say, you know, fashion myself an upgrade once in a while or whatever I want to use the points for. You know, I spend a lot of energy earning them. And now it looks like I've got greater options. Doesn't look like. I do. I have greater options to spend them and get rewarded for those loyalty points. So I think it was really well done. And I think that's the beginnings and hopefully the first of many restorations of faith in the brand that me as a customer, as a trading partner can have with them. I'd love to see it continue, but well done, really.
You can check out the Mumbrella website right now. We actually did an article with a couple of PR experts in the field, their reaction to the news. Interestingly, there was it was quite divisive. A lot of people love this and some thought it wasn't such a great move. But I think more importantly, given the year Qantas has had, they're doing something, right? Should we not be celebrating that in general? We, you know, Hudson is now in. This is the biggest PR move that Qantas has done since she's come in.
Yeah.
Can we not at least praise the fact that given this hard run they've had, they are trying to turn it around. They're trying to get the brand's name back to make Qantas great again, for lack of a better term. So sorry I had to go there. But
MQGA.
Looks, roll up not the greatest acronym. We'll work on that one. But is that not a good thing?
Oh, I think so. And look, just to refrain the comments I've already made, but to go beyond them is, I think we all wanted this. And I don't underestimate from the outside looking in how complicated it would be to execute something well like this. So I think it's an excellent move. It's really, given the size of the change, it's been done quite quickly. And so I would credit that too, that they're being shown to recognize the need and are acting on it. I think too, though, you know, what we will continue to look for in making Qantas great again is, you know, that they can improve things like the on-time departure time, limited flight cancellations, not lost baggage, customer service. When you call them, you can get someone to talk to. Yeah, all of those really critical elements of customer service that we saw as lacking as customers that can be returned and perhaps even go beyond where they were. So I don't know, maybe they have the chance to even make better out of this crisis, you know, never lose the opportunity in a crisis and make even better than they were before.
I thought it's interesting you said that, you know, it's good for you because you can kind of upgrade where you see fit. You can't go higher than first class. I don't
Hey, let me remind you, there is no first class in domestic travel anymore. There hasn't been since the 80s, I don't think.
Well, again, you can check out the Mumbrella website for everything covering the Qantas news this week. After the break, we'll be talking about another brand that is under the microscope this week. Stay tuned. Welcome back to the Mumbrella Cast with myself, Neil Griffiths, and Adam Lang. Adam, we spent the first little segment there talking about some of the discrepancies happening at Seven Network right now and some of the good coming out of Qantas. However, another big brand that is now under the torch, yet again, let's be honest, is Spotify.
Mm-hmm.
On Tuesday, Spotify announced to its customers via email that its premium family subscription, which provides users with ad-free listening, will increase from $20.99 a month to $23.99 a month starting in May. A Spotify spokesperson told Mumbrella on Tuesday, "So that we can keep innovating and delivering value to fans, the music industry, and creators on our platform, we occasionally update our prices. We've begun communicating with existing subscribers in Australia to explain what this means for their accounts." Adam, your thoughts on this news as it broke yesterday?
15%-ish is a steep price increase. And I don't know that it's clear to me, other than, hey, we want to be better at our business, why that is really justified. Because 15%'s a lot. So, as a customer, and I must say I'm a really happy customer of Spotify.
Cool.
For us, it's good value, you know, that even with that increase, you know, I won't say I'll be happy to pay it, but I still think it's value for money for me and my family. We are big music fans and we consume a lot of Spotify. And so I'm okay with it. I just don't think that explanation passes muster for me as a customer. Beyond that, what I wonder is when you see an increase of 15% when you already know that there's cost of living pressure on people, is it in fact also part of the consideration set that you want people to consider the advertiser-funded model or advertiser-part-funded model rather than the premium model? So have they made a decision that actually, oh, we think our premium customers can pay a bit more and we don't mind if some of them have to drop off that subscription and go to the ad-funded or ad-supported models? And I think that is actually sensible. I think that's really smart in terms of looking at your product mix and going, well, let's test the market. Let's test and see who is willing to pay what for which program. So I think that's reasonable. What, again, I just don't know that the explanation is there. And I'd be curious as to if that is the case. Well, they just don't say it because I think that's actually understandable. We've seen Netflix do something similar when they're under investor pressure some time ago. We've seen Netflix do something similar in recent years. And it was seen as when they're under some economic pressure that they'd had all this incredible subscriber growth and then it tapered off and investors were going, what are you going to do next? And they seemed to consider something that they'd almost ruled out before, and that was an ad-supported model of Netflix. And they did it, and wouldn't you know it, it worked. And people wanted it, and it's seen as a really good business evolution. So it's seen in their minds, Netflix's, that they tried something, perhaps under a crisis, perhaps not, but in unusual circumstances. And it worked. And so is Spotify sort of looking at that product mix they've got and doing the same thing in a way to relate it to Qantas? It's no different to having first, business and economy class and classic reward seats or classic plus. So, you know, you can see the sense in that. But I would observe that also we've seen it with Spotify, 15% is a big increase. We've seen it with Netflix adjust their business model to have ad supported. But we've also seen Disney Plus go up quite a lot of money too. So they're not alone, Spotify, in considering both of those things, both the right pricing and the right offerings of price for their customers.
It's important to note as well and remember that Spotify increased the individual subscription fees from $11.99 to $12.99 last September. And then in December, CEO Daniel Ek announced that 17% of the organization's total headcount were being let go. So it does make you wonder, is this to what you said before, is this just going towards a more ad-supported model, or is this, you know, it's tough to imagine that Spotify are doing it tough.
Well, I think the record with Spotify is one where they've struggled to make a profit.
Right.
Now, it's almost stunning to say that, right, because they've almost become part of the landscape.
We know, I've mentioned on this show how bad my father is with technology. He has Spotify. He only knows the same three songs, but he knows it.
But they invest a lot in their people.
Sure.
A lot in the product. They argue they invest a lot in music too. And obviously there's musicians that dispute that. But, you know, that it is a fact that they have paid billions to artists.
Uh-huh.
I don't know that any business model ever stops evolving, and clearly they must continue to evolve their business model too. They've got to make money for their investors. They've got to be profitable. Without being profitable, it won't stick around. It's like we want Qantas to succeed. We want Seven to succeed. You know, as fellow business operators, we want brands to continue. And so I'd celebrate anyone adjusting their mix to be profitable and carry on. But it is quite a significant change in pricing, you know, in the last 6 months. It is, to your point, 17% is a lot less people, right? So clearly that's a real quickening, to borrow a Highlander phrase, you know, a quickening of what you would normally see as an evolutionary climate. Things are changing, and perhaps that actually speaks to the cyclical and structural nature of change.
On the latest episode of Mumbrella's One-on-One podcast series, I was joined by ARIA CEO Annabelle Hurd, who we've already written a couple of news stories about because she makes a lot of good points, Adam.
But one of them was terrific.
Yeah.
Excellent interview. I really enjoyed it.
One of them was about, we've spoke about a few weeks ago that the Australian music industry is going through a bit of a crisis at the moment with festivals falling down left, right and centre.
And Australian artists as well.
And Australian artists. And funnily enough, if you listen to that interview, I kind of suggested that the bigger artists like the Amy Sharks and the G-Flips, they're doing fine. And she said, well, actually, you probably shouldn't assume that. Like, yes, they're better off than the smaller indie artists, but it's a tough struggle out there.
And she actually kind of issued an SOS to Adland and said, if you are doing a campaign or you're producing advertisements for us, whatever it may be, consider using an Australian artist or an Australian recording.
Mm.
And funnily enough, she actually said that's one of the reasons that ARIA introduced the first ever Best Use of Australian Music in Advertising ARIA Award, because she wanted it to be an incentive.
Mm.
Adland wins, Australian music industry wins. It was a really interesting talking point by Annabelle there.
Yeah, so from my time in the music business on both music publishing and recording artists work, the impact that a song use in an advertising campaign or a film or a television show can be profound, right? It can be game-changing for an artist or for a song. And since that, so we're working in the industry, so removing that bias of being on the inside of that, as a punter, when I watch a television show, a movie, an ad, I love it when I hear an Australian song. I really do. So it makes me feel differently about the brand. Now, I'm a big fan of music and a big fan of Australian artists, but I'd love to think that I'm not the only one who thinks that way when they hear an Australian song in an Australian film, television show, theatre production, advertising campaign, that it works better. So I am an absolute advocate of using Australian music and Australian artists in commercial propositions. I think Annabelle's absolutely right.
And what's funny when you really think about it, you know, I remember Empire of the Sun, their big single, Walking on a Dream.
Yeah, WA Tourism one.
So this song was released in 2008, and it was then used in a Honda Civic ad in 2016. It blew them up on a whole new level in America to the point where they went on the Ellen Show that year to perform an 8-year-old song.
What about Jet with How You Gonna Be My Girl and Apple?
Yeah.
Right? That was massive.
Yeah. It's the idea that if America can get behind these kind of songs, then so should Australia, and there is benefit there.
It's funny. Sometimes it's called the cultural cringe, where we almost need the overseas affirmation before we think, yeah, they're actually pretty good.
Yeah.
Don't wait for the overseas affirmation. Take it as read. Take it as ours. You know, if it's an Australian artist and you like the song, go for it.
Yeah. Well, you can read about it on the Mumbrella website, or you can listen to the episode wherever you're listening to this episode from. I imagine just scroll up or down, however your phone works. The episode will be there. But Adam, it's time. It's time for everyone's favorite segment. Now, I don't know if the song is ready, but I can tell listeners a theme song is coming for this, because I'm sick to death of doing a song that is just poorly done. So it's coming, but it's time for Adam's Other News. Adam, what in the world is making other news this week?
Okay. So the Economic Weather Report, aka Adam's Other Business. Right, Neil, we're nearly 27 million people in this country, nearly. We are feeling cautious with our money. We are looking forward to tax cuts from July 1. I think I speak on behalf of everybody there. And also those with debt, which let's face it, is most of us, are looking forward to interest rate relief, I hope sometime toward the end of this year. So this week, what's happened? So yesterday was a bumper day for data. The Westpac Melbourne Institute survey of consumer sentiment and the index for April was released. Now, a neutral level on consumer sentiment is 100. So that's when we feel about normal. It came in April at 82.4 points. Now, that is as low as it's been for this. It's been for 2 years it's been this low. And that is the only twice in the last 30 years has it been this low for this long. So it's quite an incredibly pronounced period of low consumer confidence. And I think when you hear data like that, you go, yep, that makes sense. Cost of living pressure. Now, again, it's not everyone doesn't feel the same way. These are total figures and averages. They apply to everybody, but they apply to everybody a bit differently. Consumer price rises have outstripped wage growth by 6 percentage points over the last 3 years. So that means that really inflation has beaten any wage rises we've had, and we're feeling that pressure. Now, that was a comment by Matthew Hassan, the senior economist at Westpac. This data is really valuable, and my Fear and Greed podcast colleague, Sean Aylmer, described it as this: consumers have been pessimistic for 2 years and there's little sign of improvement. So we're really hanging on those tax cuts coming in from 1 July and interest rate relief. Second to that was the NAB monthly business survey, also released yesterday for March 2024. Business confidence was below average, even though trading conditions are better than normal. So we've got gloomy consumers and we've got businesses that are doing it. Some of them are doing it tough too. So really a couple of very interesting data points this week around how we feel as businesses and consumers that are saying, yeah, it is tough out there. So amongst that, Neil, I have to say a couple of exceptional items. Property prices, record highs. You know, largely a supply issue, both rents and purchasing property.
Mm-hmm.
Residential property is incredibly strong. And the ASX, the Australian Stock Exchange, we are hitting record highs. So there's confidence in investors too. So, you know, again, these figures apply to macro sense, but they apply to everybody differently. Really, there's a cautious mood out there.
Adam, thank you so much for giving us Adam's Other Business.
So, Neil, after that sort of data mix, yeah, consumers are cautious, businesses are cautious, but that does not mean there is zero opportunities for brand growth here. You know, there is still a way to trade into this cleverly, and it's about coming up with the best solutions, working with your media brands, your creative agencies, your communications and PR people, working with your media vendors. But for all those brand marketers out there that are considering, okay, how do I achieve growth in this mix? It's possible. And I think this is where the best of teamwork comes to the fore. You know, this is where novel ideas are worth trying. And there's still plenty of fun to be had.
We'll talk about it more next week on the show. Before we head off, just a reminder, this week's one-on-one podcast, I'll be joined by the CEO of TEG, Mr. Jeff Jones. And we are 6 weeks away from Mumbrella 360 2024. Tickets are on sale now. To get yours, head to mumbrella.com.au/Mumbrella360. Adam, 6 weeks to go.
So, Neil, I'm really excited for Mumbrella 360 and very, very proud of our whole team. Greg Hoffman, former Nike CMO. Julie Bishop, former foreign minister. Dylan Alcott, former Australian of the Year. Now, this is an incredible lineup. And underneath those three, there's a total of 65 presentations of Mumbrella 360, five streams. So this event over 2 days is going to be massive, and I'm really looking forward to it. It'll be a spectacular time for the industry to get together and trade information, employment opportunities, meet great people, learn our craft, and be even better at it.
Again, to get your tickets, head to mumbrella.com.au/Mumbrella360. That's all the time we've got for today. Thanks so much for joining us. Be sure to rate, subscribe, and review this podcast wherever you're listening to it from. And we'll see you all again next week.
Podcast edit by Abes Audio.